Elizabethtown, founded to support the new Bladen County Courthouse, is only 5 years old in 1781 and growing slowly. The old courthouse, 3 miles upriver, burned in 1768. Plantations supplying materials used in shipping, like tar and wood, are springing up along the river around town. However, building supplies are harder to get during the war, so there are only around 20 property owners here. The town runs a couple blocks on either side of Poplar Street, a block southeast, along both sides of what still is the main road today, Broad Street. In a February 1781 letter written here to Brigadier General Alexander Lillington, Brown expressed the frustrations of local patriots since the British had taken Wilmington the month before. "I will guard the river as far as lies in my power, but the greatest part of the good people in this county is engaged back against the Tories, and seems very loath to go against the British and leave their families exposed to a set of villains who daily there attains their destruction." Little has changed 6 months later. Tories are camped all around this spot on Sunday evening, August 26. They have posted sentries on all four sides of the camp. Sally Salter, 39-year-old unmarried daughter of an influential family, wanders the camp selling eggs. She had approached a ferry running where Poplar Street now crosses the river, visited later. The Tories had gathered all the boats in the area on this side, but she talked a sentry into bringing her over. When done, she goes back across. The Patriots were camped by her family home. One second-hand source says she overheard their decision that someone should scout the camp and volunteered. She reports back with the information they need to plan a surprise attack. Nothing else is known about Salter except that her father was supposedly a soldier away from home at the time, and she died in 1800 at age 58. Local historians say the Patriot officers had pulled a ruse to lull the Tories into a sense of safety. They broke camp on August 24th and let it be known to the locals that they were leaving Bladen. They headed east for the Neuse River. Word got back to the Elizabethtown Tories, who were pleased and celebrated. 3 days later, however, the Whigs turned around. Despite deep hunger, the Patriots move after Salter returns, taking advantage of a bright moon. They approach the far bank southeast of town. Because they can't find any boats, they march about a mile farther downriver, to the right when facing downtown. There they strip naked and tie their clothes and ammunition to their heads. They wade across the wide river, holding their guns vertically by the barrels so the firing mechanisms are out of the water. Though only breast deep for some, it is nearly to the noses of others. After scrambling up the steep bank through thick canes, they get dressed and cross what now is NC 87, then the dirt King's Highway. There they split into three groups and spread out. 2 hours later, one source says, they were in position. Look east, away from downtown, out MLK Drive. Before daybreak, the moon has gone down, and the Tories are asleep in darkness. Suddenly you hear a shot from the woods in the direction you are facing. Another second-hand account says a Tory sentry fired a warning shot into the air when an unknown party did not answer his challenge. "Stand! Who goes there?" A gunshot happened to be the signal prearranged among the Patriots to start the attack, the account says, so shots and shouts now fill the night. Sentries on all sides are pushed back. You see muzzle flashes throughout the woods on three sides. Confused Tories, many half-dressed for sleeping through a summer's night, scramble to their feet and try to return fire. From the trees, they hear commands being yelled to various Patriot colonels, including some not there. The attackers are trying to sound like many different regiments. You also hear the word Washington shouted. Some Loyalists become convinced their attackers include the Continental Cavalry of Colonel William Washington, known to be in South Carolina, or even his distant cousin George Washington. Turn around and face downtown. Under pressure of the surprise attack, the Tories begin to fall back into town, hiding behind buildings and in houses. Another threat is at hand. Fanning had warned Slingsby that he was holding too many Whig prisoners. Perhaps a sense of guilt accounts for Slingsby's reputation as being lenient with patriots, including those he is holding now. The Cross Creek merchant may have been violating two oaths. As a former Quaker, he must have sworn off violence at some point, since Quakers were pacifists. Also, he was captured after the Tory debacle at the 1776 Battle of Moores Creek Bridge and imprisoned in Halifax. He is probably violating the parole terms for his release by fighting for King George again. Regardless, he pays for not keeping the prisoners tied up, as they begin to grab weapons and attack Tory officers in the rear of the camp. About this time, Colonel Slingsby comes out of the house he is staying in, and both he and a captain are mortally wounded. The Tories panic. Some begin running toward the river. Others retreat northwest, to the left, firing as they go. After running out of ammunition, they flee. A few simply raise their hands and surrender. Follow the retreating Tories by walking or driving toward downtown on MLK Drive. Where it ends at Broad Street, go straight across into the parking lot. Continue to the back of the lot until you run out of earth at the edge of a deep ravine. Then go to the next audio clip.